Brad, he's in our Touch Points Rehab interview chair, the Connecticut Speaker of the House, Joe Arosemowitz. Mr. Speaker, good morning and welcome to Brad and Dan.
Good morning, gentlemen. I apologize a little bit for my voice in advance. I have one of those dreaded summer colds, but I'm really happy to be here with you guys this morning.
I thought maybe it was from whipping your players into shape for the upcoming football season.
That just does the voice. I could do without the nasal congestion, though.
Now, looking at this situation,
yes.
Mr. Speaker, you know, and I'm out a lot. I meet a lot of people, and they cannot understand these increases in taxes. It drives them crazy. And why can't you work with the Republicans? Because they don't want taxes? Is that the reason?
No, I don't think so. We're trying. Remember, I sent the letter that actually made a couple of meetings happen. There's been three meetings so far with the Republicans. It was Senator Looney, Themis Claridis, and Senator Fasano and myself over the last couple of weeks. And I thought the meetings were good. I told them I was going to put out a budget that would be the foundation for negotiations. In no way, shape, or form do I think it's going to pass as is. But I want to have discussions. And they all agreed that they'd also put a budget up on the table and we'd have discussions. It's just a shame it's taken so long.
Mr. Speaker, do you have the unilateral support of your caucus on the budget, which was announced earlier this week?
No, I think we'd have to make a few tweaks here and there, but ultimately that could be the foundation to where we'd get to a budget. It'd be counterproductive for me to come out with a budget and say, hey, this is our budget, we can pass it tomorrow, what do you guys have to say? That would really devalue the process of working in a bipartisan way. But it does contain many of the bases that my caucus has talked about. It took into consideration a lot of the structural changes both the Republicans and some of the Senate Democrats talked about. It included some of the governor's ideas. So it really was more of what I saw as a consensus agreement overall rather than something that would specifically just get the votes of my caucus.
You know, Mr. Speaker, another thing that I hear a great deal, and Dan does too, this whole thing with unions, and
mm-hmm.
we're not against unions. They think we are. They think we're fighting them. We're not fighting them. However, it just seems a little bit absurd that we have contracts that go on for years. If we have a budget that is every 2 years, okay, why can't we have a contract with the unions that are every 2 years instead of last 5, 6, 7, 8 years, everything's guaranteed? Why can't we change that?
So let me say this. I listen to you guys a lot, even when I'm not appearing, and I really don't believe that you guys are anti-union. So folks that say that, I'd be happy to have the discussion. I think you bring up valid points. But think about this, too. Businesses, when you go out and talk to them, they operate on 5 and 10-year plans. The state employee unions over the last 8 years have taken like 6 or 7 zeros in some areas. So they're not getting these huge raises. But you do have to at some point be able to plan out what you're going to need and what you're going to have to pay. The CBEC agreement, by extending it out to 2027, actually allows us to save not only $1.57 billion over these next 2 years, but we're talking $25 billion over the lifetime. It's not the state employees' benefits anymore that are causing a lot of these budget woes, but it is for 40 years we did nothing about it. Even when we had surpluses, we'd hand it out like kids in a candy store as opposed to paying down some of our long-term debt. This is a long problem shared by both parties, and what bothers me is just like saying you guys are anti-union, it just sounds like a good talking point that state employees' benefits are so absurdly high that it's causing our budget woes. They're actually in line for the most part with our neighboring states. Some neighboring states actually have benefits that are higher than our state employees now. They've taken multiple zeros. They do some of the jobs that none of us want to do. They work in the prisons. They're out around the clock plowing our streets. They're making the difficult decisions of whether to have a child stay with their family or have them go into the court system. They're difficult jobs. So having the planning and the ability to plan, I think, actually benefits the state in the long run. And to have them locked out isn't necessarily true. The governor, this governor, has already opened it up twice. Governor Rell opened it up once, and we all know what Governor Rowland did. So the contract in place gives us planning, but doesn't bar future negotiations.
Under this budget, as announced by the House Democrats earlier this week, Mr. Speaker, under this budget, are you confident that it puts in motion the structural changes that Connecticut requires in order to end these persistent deficits?
So the key to me with that, and that really is a great question, because that's what I've been struggling with. The politics to me has always been about helping people, and I'm not even worried about the next election. And I know I told you guys that last time I talked to you. I want to be able to make a difference and someday look back and say, look, that hard decision I made did X, and it really put the state on the right track. It really comes down to economic development, and we're not going to tax our way out of this hole. We're not going to defund things our way out of this hole. We're not going to change how we fund municipalities and just have them raise property tax to get us out of this hole. It is making investments in our big cities, some of which that are facing bankruptcy. It's about making investment in education for the jobs that we need, and continuing to work with organizations with like CCAT, some of our technical schools. That ultimately will get us out of it. And those are contained in the budget. Allowing municipalities the flexibility to regionalize, that is in our budget. And also putting oversight on some of these big cities. You know, we all like Luke Bronin. I hear him on your program. Really smart guy. And folks are willing to send some money to Hartford, but we want to make sure they're moving in the right direction. So we provide that oversight. So don't even, you know, look at the numbers in the budget. The numbers are important. But look at the narrative that we put forward. I think it really does move Connecticut into the future and put some of those structural changes in.
Now, does it specifically address the mayor's need for $40 million on top of the money that he gets now from the state of Connecticut?
It does, and it's actually an interesting agreement that we're trying to reach. It's not done yet, but I'm hopeful. Our hospitals, our local hospitals, many of which that are located in the cities that of need, specifically Hartford and Hartford Hospital and Elliott Joseph over at Hartford Hospital, they're willing to work with the cities and try to structure an agreement to end this ongoing battle between the administration, the hospitals, and the legislature, be partners in our revitalization of the cities, and provide that necessary funding at some levels. And, you know, the deal's still being worked out, but we're talking, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars area of the hospital stepping forward to work with our cities to ensure that economic development continues. The schools are in a better position to put out those type of individuals they need to employ at the hospital. So we're working on that, and it does look very positive right now.
Now, the big question is that we get all the time. There's got to be a budget. When will there be a budget? I mentioned October. Some said, when is it going to be? Do you have any gut feeling yet, Mr. Speaker, when we can expect a budget?
So I've been told by former leaders and friends to stop putting dates out there because it just sets myself up for failure. But we've told our caucus to come in September 14th and plan on staying there as long as we need to until we have a budget. And the only reason we picked September 14th was I really wanted to give 3 weeks to negotiate with all the parties. So it wouldn't be seen as one caucus trying to ram a budget down the throat of the legislature or the state. So we'll offer that time. If folks fail to lead, fail to compromise, then we'll just run the budget that we can get to that we feel offers the consensus. I was really disappointed. Minority Leader Claritas and I have had a long relationship, and I thought we've worked well together. But she stood right at the microphones the other day and said, I will not compromise, which doesn't set a good tone for negotiations. I don't know anybody that enters negotiations saying they won't compromise. So that's problematic, but I'm willing to talk to anybody else that is willing to compromise, because I am willing to compromise, and so is my caucus.
Now, the Republicans claim they have a budget with no tax hikes and that it's a balanced budget and that you should bring it up for a vote to the full House of Representatives. What do you say to that?
Yeah, they don't anymore. I know they're working on it. Both Len and Themis said they're working on it, and I really look forward to seeing it. But post July 18th in the House, and then when the Senate passed it on the 31st with the CBEC agreement, both of their budgets are approximately $350 million out of balance. and unachievable savings. In both of their budgets, while I never criticized them, Len's was better, but FEMIS's lacked a lot of the detail necessary to do a complete evaluation, so it may even be more. But they're working on it, and I trust them at their word, and I'd love to see it. And there is nothing that will come forward in their budget that I'm going to say I'm not willing to compromise on. I want to take a look at it. Let's have a discussion, and if it makes sense for the state of Connecticut, regardless of our political parties, I plan on putting it into the budget we'll present to the House.
Now, does your budget, as currently presented, keep that cap on the mill rate for motor vehicles at 37 mils, or does it permit the municipalities to charge the full price of whatever their mill rate is?
Very important question based upon where your broadcast is originating. We all know the issues they've had there. Yes, it does. It keeps it at the 37% level. While we had hoped to put it to 32, holding it at 37 is still a vast improvement for the majority of the bigger cities in the state of Connecticut.
That's key. Now, how about the governor's proposal? He wanted to kick $400 million of the teacher's pension fund back to the municipalities. Where does that stand in this plan?
While I understand the logic of what the governor was trying to do, and it essentially goes after some of the more affluent communities, we pay $30 million towards the Greenwich pensions for their teachers. And I understand that, but my caucus was not willing to play Robin Hood with that. We do nothing. We do no changes to the teachers' retirement as it affects the municipals.
Now, this is a big, Mr. Speaker. I know you've got a sore throat. I don't know what your schedule is. Could you hold through the break and spend another couple of minutes with us?
Sure.
Oh, that's terrific.
Okay. Yeah. No, this is.
Well, I mean, to me, Brad, here's the situation. We're coming up on a break here. You sit down and you do the math.
Yeah.
The sales tax hike under the proposal by the Democrats goes up to 6.85%.
Correct.
So let's put it into perspective. You spend $100, and instead of spending $6.35 of tax on top of the $100, you're spending $6.85. That's a 50-cent increase. So here's my situation in Torrington. Am I willing to spend 50 cents more in taxes, or am I willing to spend, if this plan isn't passed, my mill rate going up from 45 mils to 58 mils from a property tax standpoint?
Well, of course not.
Well, there you go. I mean, that's the debate we need to have in this state, because there's no question this budget, the property tax, ties in with the state budget.
I got the same thing in Bloomfield. I know. They've already said that, you know, it's up to the council, but I paid my taxes on my car, but I'm prepared to pay more if I have to. I guess I'm going to have to, maybe.
Okay, back with the speaker in just a moment.
Just a moment. We'll be back with the speaker. Stay with us. More to come, my friends. Don't go away.
A couple more questions with Speaker of the House, Joe Arasimo. It's Mr. Speaker. Does this Democrat plan, the House Democrat plan, include what I'm hearing, this $12 annual surcharge on home insurance owners' policies to address the crumbling foundation issue?
It does. It actually will go towards three issues. It'll be the crumbling foundation with those of the, you know, we all know what the folks up in northeastern Connecticut are facing with their houses and their lifetime investments, in some case, crumbling below their feet. Lead paint also, and it will include some of the sinking homes down in New Haven. So it's our way to try to address that and provide that funding.
Now, the governor, of course, issued his statement yesterday on the relationship between the state and municipalities, that the municipalities can't continue to expect this kind of help from the state. What do you say about that?
I understand the statement. It's something we've been working on for a while. We do need to revamp it. And I think I said it to you the last time I was there. One of the worst decisions we ever made as a state was getting rid of some of the county functions of government. That came at a time where we thought the sky was the limit and we'd be able to raise money and we could do all the things we wanted to do at the local level. And I think we're coming to the stark realization that that's just not possible anymore. But do you do it with just wholesale cuts and $400 million changes and in some cases $580 million changes in 1 year? No, because it does exactly what it would do that you guys were talking about going into the break. Is it's just going to put the burden right on the municipalities, and then we're going to raise property taxes, which is totally unfair. We have to do it in a well-thought-out and planned and measured way over a certain number of years and allow for the municipalities to adjust.
And And, Mr. Speaker, thank you very much for giving us your time. I know how busy you are, but we had to get some of this information out to our listeners, and thank you again.
Thanks, Mr. Speaker.
No problem, gentlemen. You guys have a great day.
You as well. Take care.